I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know.
Never thought I'd ask you this question. Is the coin flip reviewable?
The coin flip actually is not reviewable, but I think we need to...
Bad NFL officiating has perhaps reached a new level, and that's where we'll start this week. I'm joined by Hannah Kaiser of Yahoo Sports and by ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr. via Skype. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Hi again, Karen.
Okay, Don, you are up first.
Well, you know, we're only a couple weeks away now from the start of the NFL playoffs. I'll be hanging on every yellow flag and non-flag to see if the league's referees make another colossal mistake and decide yet again who gets to play in the Super Bowl. Of course, I'm referring to last January's NFC Championship game. The ref's non-call of that obvious pass interference by the LA Rams helped deny the New Orleans Saints a ticket to last year's Super Bowl. The NFL this season let coaches challenge pass interference calls and non-calls. Unfortunately, all the NFL did was take a broken system and put even more error-prone humans in charge of it. And it's been really a terrible season for NFL officials. And it got so bad for last Sunday's Rams-Cowboys game that a ref botched the coin toss. At halftime, the league office had to step in and fix it. But I have a wild theory that I want to run by you guys.
Okay.
The NFL isn't really all that troubled by all this controversy. All of that stuff just turbocharges fans' conversations and adds even more drama to the game, helping boost the ratings. So I'm wondering, is the NFL truly motivated to try to fix this problem, or are they even capable of fixing it?
I am completely compelled by this argument. You tapped immediately into something that is sort of existentially facing baseball, which is the only sport I can speak intelligently about, sorry, football, because of the whole robot umps. And the idea of robot umps is fascinating to people. This will deprive us of a common enemy. That officiants are the only true bad guys in sports. And you can't get mad at a robot. That will be no fun.
I mean, it's so true. Bad officiating is such a constant. I sometimes wonder why we get so worked up about it. But the idea that the league has no interest in getting it right because getting it wrong somehow benefits the product, this is totally a conspiracy theory that I can get behind. I am not imagining, though, Don, a boardroom of executives sitting around debating the cost-benefit analysis of better officiating. I think it's probably just that if something isn't affecting the bottom line, there's really no reason to fix it. But Don, am I wrong? Is perfect officiating even a possibility in this world?
No, it's completely impossible. And you raise a really good question about the cost effectiveness of this. Ratings have skyrocketed this year. That's the metric I think that they're more focused on. You know, Rich McKay is the Falcons president. He's the head of the NFL competition committee. And at the owners meeting earlier this month, he said about these bad calls, there's no question there's been angst. Angst was the word he used. Angst is a kind of polite term for how fans are feeling about this.
On the other hand, there's like an entire TV network built around angst. It's called the CW, and it's very popular.
That's right. Yes.
We need star-crossed referee lovers, a new CW show.
Coming this fall. All right, Hannah, you're up.
All right. So MLB batters hit 6,776 home runs last season, which doesn't mean much, but it is 671 more than the previous record in 2017, and more than 1,000 more, 1,000 more home runs than in any other year before 2017. The past three seasons have been dominated by home runs. It has fundamentally changed the kind of baseball that we are watching, and people started to think that this is because of the baseball, that maybe Major League Baseball was juicing it on purpose because of how much people love home runs. Of course, chicks dig the long ball. There had been a study done on the 2017 ball, and there was a new study done this year that was recently released. And what they found was, all right, this is where we get into the numbers. 60% of the increase in home runs is, in fact, a result of a decrease in drag. Balls are smoother, they're flying faster, basically they're rounder than ever. And 40% is a result of batter behavior. And probably that's a feedback loop balls that fly further make you more likely to want to hit balls up and out of the ballpark. And of that 60%, that is a result of the decrease in drag, 35%, sorry, percents of percents, is a result of seam height. How much has the seam height changed? 0.001 inches, or the size of a human hair.
One of the things, Hannah, that I'm so confused about with all those numbers is why? They say what has changed with the balls, and they're very small percentages, but they don't explain why they have possibly changed, or do they? Or am I missing
something?
They
do not.
Okay, so this thing that they're pointing at, this seam height thing, is still a percentage of a percentage. And then it absolutely does not explain why home runs suddenly decreased this postseason. And I feel a little bit like I am being played by the Wizard of Oz right now. Like, hey, look at this shiny seam height thing and don't notice everything else that's going on behind the curtain.
Particularly when you look at the fact that included in this report was some information about how the amount that the average changes year to year is actually significantly less than the amount that individual balls differ from each other. And that should make baseball players very mad, I think. Because if balls are different within games, that will actually affect who wins.
Also, I think this might be the geekiest this show has ever gotten. So thank you for that.
I'm honored. Happy to be here.
And you know what? I got to say, I don't have a lot of confidence in these team of physics professors and people who are far smarter than any three of us when they got it wrong in 2017. And now we're supposed to have confidence in this 2019 report. What are we going to hear in 2021?
I trust that they know when they say they don't know.
Yeah.
But what I don't know is whether or not what they don't know, they should know.
Yes. Well said.
Very well said. All right. Bronny James is a freshman at Sierra Canyon High School in West Los Angeles. He's also the 15-year-old son of LeBron James. Last weekend, Bronny and Sierra Canyon faced LeBron's alma mater, St. Vincent St. Mary of Akron, Ohio. The game was played in the 20,000-seat home arena of the Columbus Blue Jackets with more than 400 credentialed members of the media in attendance. Bronny isn't even the best player on his team. Sierra Canyon has two seniors who are five-star recruits, and also Zaire, son of Dwayne Wade, and a player from China who is 7'3". And on the one hand, we can congratulate LeBron James and his wife Savannah for trying to insert some sanity into this kid's life. They deliberately chose a school with a whole lot of celebrity comings and goings, a school that prepares its student body to handle things like social media, and that's good. On the other hand, travel tournaments from Las Vegas to Virginia are selling tickets based on the fact that the son of LeBron James is coming to town. ESPN will be broadcasting 10 more Sierra Canyon games this season. And at last check, Bronny had 3.9 million Instagram followers, and that number is increasing so quickly, I'm pretty sure he will have hit 4 million before this conversation even makes it to air. Hannah, what do you make of all this?
I thought what was interesting about the school was, right, this idea that they're teaching kids how to manage their social media, and that seems smart for people who are 15 and already know that they're going to be in the public eye probably the rest of their life. Spare a thought for the reporters, however. One of the things that I found almost troubling was this idea that the school decided that he should not do any interviews this year. However, they are making a documentary about him. It just happens to be LeBron James's production company, and he's sort of controlling the shots. And it's understandable that we would want to protect a child and even a teenager, but I am concerned that we're creating a generation of superstars who are only accessible through their very own carefully controlled, intentionally favorable media. But I think that if you're going to be that famous, you should also learn how to face media that isn't controlled by your dad.
Good point. Don?
Yeah, I love that point, Hannah. And I was also struck by the fact that LeBron's uninterrupted media platform is the one that's doing one of the two documentaries in production about the Sierra Canyon team and its players. And so there is an insulation to Bronny that is intriguing. And of course, that LeBron, in fact, created. You can, you know, trace it back to the decision nearly 10 years ago on ESPN when LeBron cut out the media when he announced that he was taking his talents to South Beach. So that's very intriguing. I have to say, though, that I am, you know, so touched by LeBron and Savannah and what they're attempting to do here for Bronny. As you pointed out, Karen, there's going to be 10 of these games on ESPN, and they're selling out these arenas across the country. And I was really struck, too, by the photograph that went viral over the weekend of LeBron and Savannah. They had front row seats. Bronny's shot was in midair. And just the look of anticipation on LeBron's face and Savannah's face as that shot went up and went in was such a great visual of parents being there for their son. And LeBron has taught so many wonderful lessons in his career, and that's another one that he taught again over this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that other documentary that's being made this year is by Dwayne Wade's production company. So talk about,
right.
Yes. So talk about having very friendly media. But, you know, for a 15-year-old, maybe very friendly media is appropriate.
Yeah.
At some point, he is going to have to go out in the big, wide, bad world.
But maybe he won't. He'll just talk directly to his 3.9 million Instagram followers.
Oh, it's got to be 4 million by now.
4 million. Sorry, 4 million. Sorry, Bronny. Didn't mean to undersell you. I appreciated the ways in which their version of normalcy is surrounding him with other abnormal kids. Children of celebrities are going to be celebrities, and the best thing that their parents can sort of do for them, and you're right, Don, that this is like a lovely act of parental oversight,
yeah,
is an attempt to figure out a specific childhood that takes that into account and doesn't ignore it.
Yeah. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Hannah Kaiser of Yahoo Sports and ESPN's Don Van Natta Jr. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Should you be feeling generous this holiday season, please do us a solid and subscribe to the Only a Game podcast. And if you're feeling extra generous, please leave us a review. It will help more people find our show. And happy holidays from all of us here at Only a Game.